Welcome to the Morning Stoker podcast. I'm Jesse.
And I'm Ty, and we bring you habits of successful people. And what are we talking about today?
Food cravings.
I'm craving food right now.
Activate. Do you want to hear what this segment came out of? My thought pattern here?
Was it 2 a.m. and you woke up to go eat frosting out of the fridge? Like you do every middle of the night?
It's not always frosting.
Jesse, sleep, walk, eats.
I'm a night eater.
Does anybody else, there's a term for it?
Well,
a night eater?
There's a real thing. Yeah.
It's not a real thing.
It is a real thing, actually.
It's just a weird thing. You sleepwalk eat. Mm-hmm. So you wake up. You don't wake up. You just get out of bed. You go downstairs. You grab whatever sugary thing is out and available.
Sometimes it's cherries.
Or crackers.
You
do like crackers in the bed. We wake up many nights and I am covered in Wheat Thin crumbs. Do you eat over me? When you go get the food, do you come back and then eat over the top of me? I picture this. You go get a butcher knife and your Wheat Thin crackers and you come back and you eat over me and just... in your sleep, envision stabbing me because I've been a jerk.
Wow.
Yeah, this got real. Welcome, everybody, to the Morning Struggle podcast, where Ty may not have much longer to live because his wife who murders.
I don't actually murder. I definitely eat in my sleep, though, most certainly. No, this is my thought. You guys, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Does your tummy think all foods are mashed?
Oh, because you mash them in your mouth.
Yeah. Because the only food that your tummy gets is mashed up food.
Yeah, so that's why I eat all my stuff whole. Don't even chew it up. Don't even chew it up. Because my tummy needs variance mm-hmm. on the mashed up food. Mm-hmm. It's not a baby. It's not a baby tummy. You want some steak in there. You want some unchewed steak.
So you just swallow your steak.
Just like our dog. Just don't chew it. Just swallow it. Okay. Is that where this came from, for real?
Yeah, that's actually what I was thinking. And I was like, oh, so how does your body decide to eat certain foods? It actually, because I did eat a scoopful of frosting in the middle of the night, and we found the spoon, and our daughter came in, and was like, what is this spoon being here? I was like, oh, yeah, I ate frosting.
Okay, so we're going to talk about why we crave certain foods.
Yes.
So what happens in our body when we crave that real sugary donut?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, or we crave that steak.
Yeah.
That bread, why do we crave those things? Mm-hmm. And are you going to tell us how to stop craving them?
Well, it's not necessarily stop craving them, but make it so your body's more balanced, so you're less likely to have extremes.
Ooh, so this is the diet show.
No,
This is the South Beach Bod diet show.
No.
You're just going to talk about what happens in your brain.
It's not the brain, actually, but it is it's called the second brain.
Oh, our second brain. Our bellies. What happens in our bellies. And then how to kind of be more balanced in that so you don't go eat the entire container of frosting.
Yeah, just a scoopful.
In one sitting and then feel all guilty and sick.
Yeah, I never feel guilty, but a little sick sometimes. Never guilty.
Okay. All right. Well, I love it. So we bring you habits of successful people. We're going to talk about a history segment.
Yep.
We're talking about science. We're going to talk about a coffee review or coffee segment.
Yes.
And then we're going to do an action plan on how to understand why we crave food and then make it productive.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Here we go. This day in history. All right. Fourth wall coming down. Full disclosure. This one, it comes from the History Channel. And I didn't highlight it. So what I do is I find my stuff. I highlight just the pertinent points. And then I'm on fire. And I give you the points. And it makes it sounds like I came up with all this research. Mm-hmm. And I sound really smart. This one, I didn't highlight anything. Either that or there's nothing important on this article. And my segment's done. So there you go, y'all.
Thank you,
my history segment. But I'm going to go into the history behind some of our most favorite foods.
Oh, yay!
If you want to, there's probably 10 Netflix shows that discuss this completely the same. And there's visuals. And you can see the pie and ice cream on there.
Oh, yeah.
But this one, I'm going to describe it to you.
Nice.
So are you ready for the first one?
Yes.
Pie. There you go.
Pie.
Pie's delicious. Next one. No. Pie, or P-Y-E, as it used to be spelled, is a dish where you have a crust and then something inside of it, right? So we think of apple pie, right? So, but you can also have meat pies, a chicken pot pie.
Didn't it used to be called a coffin?
I don't know, but it probably does. But the American pie, there's very few things that are as impressive as the American pie, right?
Right.
Or American apple pie.
Right.
So American apple pie, not American pie. That's a movie. And from back in the day, not as
really
good as apple pie.
Really long time ago. Wow.
Apple pie was actually invented in England. So there you go. Pre-revolutionary days. And then it came, it was unsweetened though. Made with unsweetened apples. Ooh. They're probably gross stuff because those Brits, they love their meat pies and their unsweetened apples. But what would you do is you put your pie together and then you'd steam it. And the reason you have those pie crusts is they last longer.
Oh.
So you cook it in a pie instead of just cooking the item. But you wouldn't eat it. But back in the day, a lot of times, initially, they wouldn't eat it.
Yeah.
Because there was no sugar or wasn't sweet crust.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just open it up and you'd eat whatever's inside. And it's a good way to cook it.
Because it was like a way to cook it, right? Uh-huh. The steam and stuff. Oh, yep. Very cool.
But now that they make it all delicious crust.
It's the best part.
It doesn't say who the first person to make a delicious crust was.
It's Marie Callender's.
But Marie Callender did. She said, I'm going to make the crust edible. And everybody said, what? You're going to eat the garbage of part of the meat
we
pie?
We call the coffin for a reason,
of the apple
lady.
Pie? So anyway, there you go. Second one, eggnog. Did you know eggnog is centuries old?
I did, because I did a bunch of research on
it
once.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So culinary historians, they don't know the exact lineage, but they agree eggnog originated from the early medieval Britain posset, a
Ooh.
Hot, milky, ale-like drink, which had alcohol in it.
Mm-hmm.
In the 13th century, monks were known to drink possets with eggs and figs.
So what were the monks doing? The monks seemed to live the best life.
They were getting drunk, and they were chanting.
Yeah.
It sounds like a great life.
Right?
You should listen to our downsize episode,
mm-hmm.
because those monks downsized into a giant monastery where they're getting drunk with their buddies.
Mm-hmm.
That's
all
the life.
Time.
That's the life. But eggnog was often used in toast to prosperity and good health.
Right.
But it wasn't always an end-of-the-year holiday tradition.
Oh.
That didn't happen until the drink came to America. And even George Washington had his own eggnog recipe made with rum.
Ooh.
No big deal. Waffles. You ready?
Waffles.
Waffles are the next one. Where the heck did waffles come from? You ready for this one?
Yeah.
Ancient Greece. Everything that was great
came from Greece.
Came from ancient Greece. Gods, lead in our aqueducts, all the good stuff.
Aqueducts.
Ancient Greece used a tool of a kind like waffle iron to make cakes. And then when the European settlers... So in Greece, Greece is in Europe.
Okay.
Right? And
yeah,
then
yeah.
European settlers, pilgrims, brought the waffle iron to the United States.
Oh, so it's like an actual press. Like it's a.
And it went from Greece and then the Holland. In Holland, they perfected it.
Oh, yeah, they did.
Of course they did. Clogs and waffles. What else are you going to do in Holland? So the pilgrims, when they came over to the New World, mm-hmm. they brought these waffle irons en route from Holland to Massachusetts.
So you needed a Holland buddy. Like, you needed a friend.
Yep. Thomas Jefferson reportedly brought a waffle iron home from France.
Oh.
And it helped spark the fad. Thomas Jefferson was a big fad creator. He pantaloons, wigs. It didn't matter what he was doing. Everybody else wanted to do it too.
He was the Beyonce of his era.
But it wasn't until 1930. He was the Beyonce of his era. It wasn't until 1930, though, mm-hmm. that we got the American version of the waffle, which is California Family.
What?
Instant waffle mix, electricity, ingenuity.
What?
Toaster ovens, Lego, my Eggos.
Oh, look
1930s.
At that.
Yep.
That was in the 30s?
Yep, 1930s,
no
Eggo
joke.
Waffles. And that made it an American staple. Mm. Before, it was kind of a Holland cloggy festival.
Was it hard to do? And then Lego made it? Lego Eggo?
Eggos made it. Legos are building blocks, toys that kids do.
Whatever the thing is.
Yeah.
It just made it easier, right?
Yep, Lego Eggos, okay. That's tasty. All right, peanut butter. You ready? So peanut butter origins are mysterious.
Ooh.
So a lot of people think that George Washington Carter came up with the idea... because he came up with a book in 1916, How to Grow the Peanut and 105 Ways of Preparing It for Human Consumption. George Washington Carter.
Yeah.
Boom. Big peanut guy.
Yeah.
He's a peanut farmer and mm-hmm. he's doing all these crazy things. Well, they probably just put the book together.
Yeah.
They invented peanut butter before. They do think though that this Dr. John Harvey Kellogg, who you know, because mm-hmm. he had the Kellogg Institute.
He did.
And his brother came in and said, let's throw some sugar on these cereals.
Mm-hmm.
And they got in a big fight, and then the brother won, and that's why we have Frosted Flakes.
Yeah.
So in 1895, he patented a process for turning raw peanuts into butter-like vegetarian health food that he fled to his clients in Battle Creek, Michigan. Michigan was his Kellogg's Institute.
Right. That's the thing is, like, all these things were pitched as health foods.
Yeah. Peanut butter. So let's get healthy. Let's throw some peanut butter on some toast, and it's just like eating an apple.
Mm-hmm. Same thing.
Next one, buffalo wings. Do you know why? They're chicken wings. They're just little chicken wings.
Yeah, broken apart.
Why are they called buffalo wings?
Because they're delicious.
Because they're invented in Buffalo, New York.
Oh, no joke.
It's one of those foods where the origin is in the name. So this is what happened. There's two versions. I'm just going to give you one. If you like the other version, email Jesse and say, Ty's got to do both versions or the right version.
That's right.
The first plate of wings was served in 1964 at a family-owned restaurant in Buffalo called the Anchor Bar.
Okay.
It was the brainchild of Teresa Bellissimo. You go Bellissimo when you do the thing with your hand in your mouth.
Uh-huh.
She covered them in her own special sauce, and she served them with a side of blue cheese and celery because that's all she had.
Oh, that's perfect.
It wasn't that it was some culinary expert thing. It's, we got some celery, we got some blue cheese.
Here's some
chicken wings. I'm going to throw my special hot sauce on it. Eat some chicken wings. Mm-hmm. And these buffalo wings are amazing. She says they're chicken wings. And everybody says, but we're in Buffalo. Let's call them a buffalo wing. Put us on the map. Nobody wants to come here. We got a football team. They're pretty good sometimes. Well, let's use wings. So anyway, one story of the other version is there's a surplus of chicken wings. But I think the Bellissimo family restaurant was
the best one. That's
maple
a good one.
Syrup. You ready?
Maple syrup has been around forever.
But the American maple syrup industry can be traced back to the 17th century when they began to tap trees in their properties for a sweetener at the time was cheaper than sugar.
Yeah.
So the reason maple syrup came to be is because it was cheap. Mm-hmm. So Northeast U.S. and Canada, they learned about these sugar maples from the Native Americans, and then they don't really know how the Native Americans figure this out.
Uh-huh.
But one of the stories is one of the chiefs threw a tomahawk at a tree, sap ran out, his wife boiled the venison into liquid, and then made maple syrup.
Oh.
Because why not boil some stuff that comes out of a tree? I always try to boil anything, any liquid goo sticky that comes out.
Is it sweet when it comes out, though, a little bit?
I don't think it's that boiled. Sweet. I don't know if it's sweet. I'm not sure. But the old system making maple syrup, you leave buckets under taps. So you hammer in a tap, you open the tap, and it just drips into a bucket, and then you heat it, and then turn it into the syrup, maple syrup.
Yeah, I was thinking about buying a tree, actually, once, so we could do this.
Let's do it. The next one, salt. When was salt invented? The beginning of time.
Yeah.
Done. All right, next one. So it's... It's pretty interesting how we started using salt. This dates all the way back to when animals would find paths to salt licks. So you would find animal herd paths to a big salt rock.
Oh, because so they could lick it.
Because you could lick it. That's what a salt lick is. And a lot of hunters do that illegally to lure in animals. But So anyway, so this came... These like salt crystals, the Romans used to use these salt crystals to preserve foods.
Right.
So they're made a good antiseptic. And then the word for salt in Roman is salubrious crystals. And it's the first cousin of Salus. And it's the goddess of health.
Oh, see? Well, in salt, like you're worth your salt
mm-hmm.
is like you're worth, because they used to pay in salt.
Yep. Okay, the next one, barbecue. The word for barbecue is misapplied to everything, to just grilled meats, but it actually refers to a specific process of indirect heat and slow cooking. So it's the smoke that comes around the meat that cooks it.
It's actually in the smoker, not in the barbecuing.
Uh-huh. The Spanish, upon landing in the Caribbean, used the word barbacoa to refer to the natives' method of slow cooking meat over a wooden platform.
Oh.
And by the 19th century, the culinary technique was well established in the American South because pigs were prevalent in the region and pork was a good way to cook pork. If you cook pork any other way, it's okay, but it can be tough, not as tasty. When you cook it like the Caribbean people do, it's so good.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you got different types of, different types of, whatever you call it, types of barbecue. You got the Memphis barbecue. You've got the Kansas City barbecue. You got the Caribbean barbecue.
Is it just taste?
No, it's the way you do it. Is it a wet barbecue mop? Is it a dry barbecue mop? Are you mopping the floors after because it's really dirty and creosote soot? I don't know. Those are the things.
I forgot that we're a barbecuing podcast. So
these are the things. And then the last one.
Yeah.
Leftovers.
Oh.
Where do leftovers come from?
They're the meal before it.
So you ready for this?
Yeah.
Leftovers. It's not as if someone had invented, leftovers.
Yeah.
But it really dates back to our pre-modern feast and famine cycle.
Oh.
So saving the fruit of the harvest was like a matter of life or death. So how do you save that fruit? And before vegetation or before refrigeration, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You put it on ice, you buried it in the ground because the ground's cold. And so before Freon and refrigerators, you'd have these big ice companies that bring ice boxes. Uh-huh. But anyway, like leftovers were a big thing.
Right.
If you think about it now, why do we need leftovers? Like,
well, we don't. We just get more food.
And then
you throw it
out 2 weeks later. You say, is this good? And you smell it and you throw it out. But the reason is because it's ingrained in our DNA to essentially take food and then save it by burying it or putting it in a creek.
So that's why we put it in our little containers and we put them in our refrigerator, hoping we'll eat that later.
Uh-huh. Yep. In the 1840s, a Florida physician named John Gorey tried to cool a room where his patients were suffering from yellow fever. Uh-huh. And he figured out how to make ice using mechanical refrigeration. And that paved the way. And then it became massive in homes in the 1920s and 1930s to have your refrigerators. And then it was an easy way. And then Mr. Tupper came around and made Tupperware.
Mr. Tupper.
Seriously, his name was Mr. Tupper.
His name was Mr. Tupper because, Tupperware. Tupperware. Oh, yeah. Yep.
Anyway.
See?
All right, that's it. That's all I got for my my segment. Oh, it went super long again.
That's awesome, though.
All right. Sorry, everybody.
I'm going to need a pie, though. I'm craving some pie.
Craving some pie. So there you go. So there's some of the foods, where they came from. You're going to tell us why we crave them.
Mm-hmm.
Why do I crave unsweetened apple pie with a crust that I'm not supposed to eat? It's inedible. Mm-hmm. Every day. Mm-hmm. Every day I say, where's my mincemeat pie? So why does that happen? You're going to talk about that.
Yes, I am.
All right, here we go.
Okay, so all food is mashed according to the tummy because it doesn't see anything different, right?
Yeah.
This gets even better because I went down this weird rabbit hole and now we have this segment.
Okay.
So microbes in your gut, so in your stomach and both intestines.
You have bacteria and little protozoas and little guys.
All kinds of stuff in there.
You're like 70% not you.
Yeah, it's wild. So they not only manage your appetite, but they manipulate your food choices.
What? So the bacteria in your stomach mm-hmm. says, we want mince pies. We want mince pies. And then you say, I don't even know what a mince pie is, but let's go get a mince pie.
That sounds delicious.
So you're the mechanism, you're the machine, the vehicle for these bacteria to mm-hmm. go get whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not my fault I'm eating frosting in the middle of the night. It's my bacteria's fault.
Well, I mean, yeah, but we can do some things to make it more productive because I'm going to tell you why this is happening.
Hush down, little tummy bacterias.
I know. I imagine these little guys.
How do they manipulate our brains?
Okay, here we go. So the hypothalamus is the part of our brain that manages all the hormones. The hormones are ways of indicating that we're hungry, that we want certain things. All kinds of stuff happens with our hormones, obviously. Right. So the hypothalamus goes, sends a signal through the vagus nerve down into the digestive system, which is considered our second brain. And that's why, is because it signals a lot of things. Like they have taste preferences and everything down there.
The bacteria have taste preferences?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Isn't this crazy? So there's two ways that this kind of occurs. So we have environmental factors. So sights, smells, stress, and boredom. So the environmental factors, and it signals to our eyes, obviously, take it to the hypothalamus, and then it sends it down the vagus nerve into our second brain, and it says, hey, there's pizza available. What do you think? And then the little microbes go, yay!
Because they're always saying yay. I've never heard a bacteria say no to pizza.
Yeah, and then they send it back up, and then we end up buying a pizza or eating an entire pizza.
Right.
We get, like, these huge, huge cravings, right? Or the opposite way, where the little microbes, and I imagine them doing like the Morse code, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, mm-hmm. and the little microbes send the signal through the
vagus nerve
up to the hypothalamus that indicates, oh, we need to go find pizza.
Okay, so two things happen. One, the pizza's there, mm-hmm. and you say, hey guys, you want pizza? And they say, yeah. Mm-hmm. Or two, you're sitting at home or at work or whatever, and then the guys say, you know what we haven't had in a few hours? Pizza. And then you go, ooh, I need to go find a pizza. All mm-hmm. right, that makes sense.
So, and it's funny because the little microbes, when they want something, they will signal to you and have actual physical reactions. That's why we salivate, we crave specific things. We get a rumbly tummy, and we have pre-insulin response.
Okay.
So our little microbes are telling our hypothalamus, oh, we need some food. We got to go get something. That's where you get like feeling dizzy or that kind of thing, is because the microbes are telling you that you're hungry, that they don't have enough nutrients down there.
So they're saying, hey, we need to keep splitting and reproducing in here. You need to go get us more food.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we crave.
Yes, that's why you want things.
Interesting.
Isn't that crazy? So they actually did this really cool study where they took rodents, and this is kind of gross, but this is the reality of our digestive tract. So they took rodents who were primarily herbivores, and then they took rodents that were a mixed. So they omnivores.
Omnivores and herbivores.
And herbivores.
So omnivore is meat and plants. Herbivore is just plants.
Yeah. So the herbivore, and they were strictly that way. And they would have the option. They took these rodents that were specific to this. They would always have the option to eat meat, mm-hmm. but they never ate meat. But what they did is they took the microbiome of the omnivores,
uh-huh.
and they inserted them into the herbivores.
So they took the bacteria from the omnivores.
Mm-hmm.
They put the bacteria from the omnivores into the herbivores, and
their food cravings changed.
They wanted to eat meat.
They wanted to eat meat, and they did.
So it's not even me that's wanting these foods. It's my bacteria in my belly.
It's your bacteria. So the two most common imbalances that humans tend to have is a yeast imbalance in the digestive tract, and the yeast demands sugar.
Okay.
That demands sugar, and that's why we get these like big cravings for lots of sugar.
So we have too much yeast in our bellies.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
In our entire digestive tract.
Our whole tract. Okay.
Yeah, so it's not just the stomach, but also the large and small intestines. And I'll tell you why that's important here in a second, but they demand sugar, and that's why we get our sugar cravings.
Okay.
It's a very, very common one.
Okay.
Very, very common. And then the pre-voltilia...
Privatilia, I don't know. Sounds good to me.
It craves starchy carbohydrates such as bread, pastas, and potatoes.
So this type of bacteria.
Yeah. Those are the two imbalances.
So you got a yeast imbalance, too much yeast, or you've got this other bacteria that craves a bunch of starchy carbs.
Yes, they want all that, which makes sense because when we're craving foods, tend to be the two, but those are the most common within human beings.
Okay, so when we have too much of either one of those, we tend to binge on sugar.
Yes.
Okay.
So maintaining our microbiome diversity is the best way, hands down, to keep our appetite under control and make sure that we have accurate satiation feelings.
You want diversity of bacteria down there. You want it to be a melting pot of all the different types of bacteria. You don't want it to be homogenous.
No, because and that's where those yeast and the provotellias come in, is because they are over dominant. Mm. So if you're thinking of it as a Morse code, because only so many messages can go up through the system. If you have a massive amount of yeast, for example, that's setting up those Morse code, that's what you're going to crave and that's what you're going to want the most of. The problem is that once you feed them all that sugar, then they get bigger and more, and it continues and they get more demanding. So they're sitting there sending up those signals and pushing forward because they demand more.
So that's why it's so hard on the first 3 weeks of a diet. And then before long, it feels pretty good. And mm-hmm. then if you ever go back to eating the other food, it's kind of disgusting. Because your bacteria have changed.
Yeah.
So you got all the broccoli bacteria in there saying, there's one bacteria broccoli. And he says, I want broccoli. And no one hears him.
Yeah.
You start feeding bacteria and he goes, yes. And he gets big and he multiplies a bunch. And there's a bunch of bacteria broccolis and they're all mm-hmm. buff and healthy.
And they're diversified with all the other ones. Yeah. They're not snooty.
Yeah. But then all of a sudden, after 3 weeks of eating broccoli, there's a ton of broccoli. And you dump a bunch of donuts in there and they say, I don't want donuts.
Yeah, and they die off.
And they die off.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? So the actual competition that occurs within your digestive tract is what balances your requests for food.
Okay.
Okay? So the more diverse the microbiome in your digestive tract, the more diversity reduces anxiety, depression, and the general sense of well-being. So the more diverse, right, reduces all these things. And I want you to think of it like this. So if yeast is your primary microbiome and it's just sending up signals and it's very demanding and angry and it's, think of it apocalyptic down there,
right?
There's a massive amount. They need things. It actually, overall well-being, sense of well-being goes down because you kind of have like a little war going on down there.
Okay.
And so your anxiety goes up, your depression goes up, and this is actually statistically shown that the more distress you have in your digestive tract, the more likely your actual mental health is worse.
Makes sense, because you got essentially really intense signaling going on instead of balanced signaling.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that is my science section.
I like it.
Isn't that crazy?
I love that it's not me wanting all these sugar cravings. That it's stupid bacteria. But then I am enabling them.
You are enabling them.
So it's, when you eat all your donuts. I got spoiled bacteria in my gut.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I have spoiled bacteria in my gut is I'm feeding all the bad ones.
Mm-hmm.
And all those good ones that are saying, we really like healthy things. Please send us healthy things. You say, too bad. More donuts.
Thing is, you need yeast. Right?
You do need yeast.
You need all of these different things. But it has to be...
You're not balanced.
Yeah. It has to be balanced.
And that's why you do your probiotics? Is that what probiotics is?
I'm going to tell you how to do it. The action plan.
Besides that, you get Culturel or whatever the probiotic
is. That's not the only way.
And then you just eat your pizza and your ice cream and you pop your Culturel.
No.
You're done.
So you're sitting there... No, because then they're...
You continually replace your biome with the biome of mice.
Of
herbivore mice.
No, because then they're not being fed. They're just dying.
Yeah.
Like you're putting them in your system to die.
It's completely sustainable. Completely sustainable.
No.
All right. So you're going to tell us how to feed the good ones and tamper down the bad ones?
Yeah. Well, just make everything more balanced. Because if you think about a diversified population, if like they can ask for different things, everybody's in balance because the yeast is not competing with the Provotilla,
yeah.
Right? Because the Provotilla eats something different and they're satisfied and the other one's satisfied and everybody's satisfied.
So that's
because
why you want a balanced diet so you have balanced diversity in your belly.
Yeah, because then everybody's satisfied but no one's overgrowing.
Okay, I think that's actually pretty interesting.
I think it's great.
Okay, well, let's go into a quick coffee review and then you'll tell us how.
Yeah, we're going
to... How to really be... Because you want to be the boss. You don't want your bacteria and your yeast in your belly to be bosses.
All right, I'm the boss.
All right, let's get into coffee and let's do an action plan. I drank pots and pots and pots and pots of strong black coffee trying to keep my sleepy soul awake. But the sleepiness still comes along, and when it does, it's fast and strong. I end up with a bad case of the shakes.
Okay, I'm going to tell you what your microbes want to have with their coffee.
I do want to know this. They want to have heavy, heavy cream.
And they want it to coat your face. And
they want to coat every part of your inner body.
Could you imagine being a little microbe and they're just like, oh, yay.
If you turned me inside out, I'd be so slippery. I could go down any slide because I'm all coated in cream on the inside.
You're
so slippery. So, all right. So what do your bacteria want
coffee
wise?
Okay. So they want it. They want their coffee extra roasty.
Extra roasty. Is that true?
Actually, yes. So there is a chemical that is produced with when you roast the coffee beans.
Uh-huh.
I'm not even going to pretend that I can say it. Yep. It's NP or NMP.
NMP.
Mm-hmm, which blocks the production of hydrochloric acid.
Okay.
And hydrochloric acid will eat away stomach cells.
Oh, so it protects you from your bacteria dying in your stomach.
Yeah, so it makes it so the more roasty your coffee is, so like a dark roast, or you can also make coffee with alkaline water, which I didn't realize.
Okay.
And it makes it so it doesn't eat away.
So there's less pH.
The system.
Mm-hmm. So you cold brew with alkaline water.
Oh, that's another one.
You throw it in there. And then all the bacteria say, sorry, we're invincible now.
Yes, you make superhero microbiome.
All right.
Biome. No, but so it doesn't deteriorate them.
Okay.
So it makes it so they can get all the benefits without being eaten away. Cold brewing also is the same way. The acidity is 65% lower.
So if you cold brew, which is putting a bunch of coffee beans in a big bucket of water
for days,
24 hours,
yeah.
And then you filter it out.
Yeah. So it's a pretty good way, actually, if you have tummy problems. I do want to note, though, if you go to a coffee shop in general, you have to ask if it was actually cold brewed or if it's just cold.
If it's just iced. So if you get an iced coffee, odds are it's not cold brew. It's got to say cold brew.
Actually cold brew, yeah.
Otherwise, it's just hot coffee poured over ice.
Yeah, which has the same acidity.
It's super fast and easy to do.
Yeah. And I mean, not at fault for them because it just ask how it's brewed, right? Yeah. Adding eggshells, which I thought was interesting, into your whole bean... When you're about to grind them.
When you grind them?
Mm-hmm. So it's one eggshell for like a 4 cup of coffee situation, right? And that what it does is it absorbs the major acids the eggshells, it doesn't change taste at all as long as you wash out your eggshell. Make sure it's clean.
So you take your eggshell, you eat your egg, you wash your eggshell, and then you grind with your coffee.
And then you grind
and then you're not throwing away eggshells.
Exactly.
This is a sustainable podcast now. Jesse talks sustainability, okay?
Yeah, this is what it is. But it's one egg full eggshell for every 4 cups of coffee. So like if you have a French press, it produces about 2, so you do have an eggshell.
Half an eggshell. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Does that make sense?
Makes sense. We're going to try this one.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, actually. And then you can add collagen peptides. And you can get the unflavored collagen peptides. It's just on Amazon.
Okay.
I didn't actually look up how much it was. But it's one heaping tablespoon of unflavored collagen peptides for every 8 ounces of coffee. And what it does is it protects your stomach lining. So it's not eaten away. So it takes away the acidity, so it doesn't deteriorate your digestive tract.
So that's how your bacteria and your microbiome in your stomach likes your coffee. So you may say, I like my coffee with sugar and cream and whipped cream on top.
And they're like, I like eggshells.
And I like eggshells and this peptide juice or peptide powder. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. That's fair.
Yeah. So those are the ways right there.
And you should listen to your microbiome.
You should.
They're smarter than you.
And extra toasty.
And they like it extra toasty. So dark roasting.
Dark roasting.
Dark roasting. Cold brew with the eggshells and the peptides. Throw it in there and say, all right, microbiome, stop asking me for pizza and ice cream for breakfast.
That's right.
This is ridiculous. And then you're good.
Yep.
And then you're healthy. And then you got abs.
And then you got abs.
This is, you tell me how to get abs. I want abs the easiest way.
Every podcast, we should go over how to get abs.
Yeah, I'm 100% in.
Boom. This is it right here.
All right. Is that it for coffee?
That's it.
All right. I love that coffee segment. So we're going to try it. I'm going to try the egg one.
Yeah, sure. I think it'll be good.
All right. And then email Jesse. Jesse at the, or oh, no, sorry, yes. themorningstrugglepodcast@gmail.com.
Yes, and then you get put in a raffle.
Or go to the newsletters. We got merchandise. Mm-hmm. We got books. Jesse wrote books because she's a therapist. So she's got books there. There's so much stuff. So if you want the stuff, go. A bunch of it is free.
Yeah, so what's kind of nice with the books is the Kindle versions are free. And we did that specifically because people can use it therapeutically. Because that's the whole idea, actually, is to get it. You do have to pay for a paper copy because a tree died for that. That's how it is. But the Kindle version is free. So go on there. But then if you want to win something,
gotta email Jesse or sign up for the newsletter.
Okay. And then we'll get you in the raffle.
Okay. I like it. Well, let's get into what do you call it? An action plan.
This is the action plan.
Man, it's rough this morning. Maybe I need to put some more peptides in my coffee.
That's right. Some eggshells.
But we're going to get an action plan on how to stop these food cravings or how to make more appropriate food cravings.
We want to balance out our microbiome. Gosh, I can't say that word this morning. In order to make it so our diet is more balanced and we're not overeating in a certain section.
All right, let's do it.
Let's hope you make the most of it, my boy.
This is going to be a pretty obvious one, but
your current situation.
I know, but it's going to be. Yes. But first, eat vegetables. Your mom told you to eat vegetables.
You know what? I'll give you this one. Normally, they'd say, eat your vegetables. And you say, why? I get it, but I don't like them, whatever. You are trying to build up your vegetable bacteria in your belly.
Exactly. Okay. And let me tell you why. So there's vitamins, there's minerals to actually feed your microbes, right? But there's a very specific type of microbe?
Microbe.
That's the word. It's called Mycobacterium vaca.
Vaca.
And it is only found in dirt.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And it triggers a release of serotonin. And it is alive on the plant. So this is raw vegetables that have been in the earth that hasn't been, it's been washed, but not like scrubbed down. Like with potatoes, how you scrub them.
Don't scrub your potatoes.
Even like a lot of grocery store type vegetables actually still have these microbes on them because they stick on the vegetable. The second you cook vegetables, though, it goes away.
Oh.
And because they die. Because they're cooked. And then, but it actually increases your serotonin. So it makes you happier.
So raw vegetables.
Raw vegetables.
Out of your garden, preferable.
Oh, that'd be amazing. Because then you can just also in your...
Yeah, your dirt.
Your dirt. But
even grocery store ones have this.
Mm-hmm. Okay. As long as you're not cooking them and they haven't been completely scrubbed down.
And then you get a serotonin boost, which is your feel good.
Yeah. So you get a serotonin boost. That microbe gets input into your intestine. So it continually releases serotonin because it exists in your gut.
Okay, and you want a lot of that. You want to feed more of those in there.
You do. Okay. And you have to do that with vegetables.
Makes sense. Yeah. So raw vegetables on that.
Raw vegetables.
That's it? That's the action plan? Eat raw vegetables?
Kind of.
Okay.
Okay, the other thing. This is, I know that a lot of these are obvious, but hang with me.
But you're telling us why. I like the whys.
Okay. So avoid sugars and processed foods, of course.
Because
right?
You're feeding your yeast and your other bacteria that really like it, and then they're overwhelming.
Yeah, so there's a lack of nutrients because it's feeding mainly off of the sugar, and it processes too fast. So the processed foods and sugars go very fast and are often, there's no nutrients by the intestinal system.
So you don't get to absorb any nutrients.
Well, because you have a little bit in your tummy, right, in your stomach. But then once it gets to your intestines, there isn't any nutrients and the microbes start eating your intestines.
So the microbes that live lower down in your bowels, they are not getting any nutrients because the ones in your stomach are just ravaging all that sugar and nutrients.
Because it goes so fast.
And there's not a lot of nutrients in it.
Yeah, so they're taking it because it's kind of like the downstream system where there's only so much that can hit the bottom, right?
You eat a carrot, it's a gold mine. So many nutrients. They say, let's let some of this pass.
Yeah, let's go.
You eat
a
Cheeto, there's a nutrient.
Yeah, and that one guy got it. And that's where your yeast builds up. And then by the end of the intestines, they don't have anything to eat. So they start eating their environment, which is you.
Okay. So you don't want your bacteria to eat you. So eat vegetables.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. And the big things on this one, honey is a good one because it's a complex sugar.
Yep.
And it will go all the way through your system. So honey's a big one.
So everybody down the chain, if you want sugar, everybody down the chain gets honey sugar.
Yeah, because it's so complex.
Okay.
Dark chocolates.
Okay.
Usually about 70%. Is a good one. And then actual fruit, like actual, not juice and not pre-mashed and not added sugar. I'm talking like you grab an apple and you eat the apple.
Yeah, a carton of strawberries, whatever it is. So those will provide nutrients all the way through the tract as well.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so that'll hit all the way down. Probiotics, you're right, as long as they have a live culture. So plenty of products pitch that they have probiotics in them. Most of them actually do not.
Oh.
Because they're not alive. Oh. And which doesn't make any sense. You're essentially taking dead microbes and you're putting them through the system and pretending that all of a sudden they're going to zombie apocalypse and relive and animate.
Whoa.
That's
okay.
It's not doing anything.
And that's morbid. That'd be dropping dead bodies into your stomach.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys should be more like these dead guys.
Yeah. And they're like, what?
All right. That makes sense.
So it needs to make sure that it's a live culture. Okay. And so do your research on that.
They're more expensive.
They are more expensive.
If it's cheap, it's probably dead.
Yeah, it's probably dead.
If it's expensive and you say, this is ridiculous, that's because there's a bunch of live cultures in there.
Yeah. And you can actually get that also from your doctor. They can prescribe live cultures as well, especially if they usually don't do it unless you're having an issue like irritable bowel syndrome or something. But you can also get it from a lot of yogurts have it. You just need to make sure that you have researched it.
Okay.
They're alive. Okay. Eat foods specific to your microbes. So we're trying to, again, eat the whole foods, but also fermented foods are really good for them.
Oh, they like ferment, like pickles?
Like pickles.
Okay.
Like sauerkraut.
Sauerkraut. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, is a big one. So any of those fermented foods.
So you heard it here. Brats. Every day, go to Costco and get a hot dog and then sprinkle some sauerkraut on it.
Oh, that would actually make it pretty good. They don't have sauerkraut available. I'd have to get my own giant Costco can.
Yeah, you go.
Open that bad boy up.
We walk in and in your purse, you have a jar of sauerkraut. And then you go get your hot dog and you get your sauerkraut.
And it doesn't smell super fresh. So people be like, what?
Sauerkraut smells so bad, especially in public.
Especially in public. So unless you're at a baseball field, and then it is the sweetest smell because that means you're watching baseball and you're eating sauerkraut.
It's weird how some smells smell good in certain situations.
Yeah. And okay. others, if I was in Costco with sauerkraut, I'd be like, "What is this lady woman? Doing?"
But you do it at the baseball game, they say, "Oh, we're getting one of those."
Yeah, oh, okay. yeah, I like we're eating those. Okay, let's see. Pay attention to how you feel and what foods you're craving. Okay, so again, those two, the starchy foods and the sugars, are the most common craved foods, which means that you have an overgrowth of those.
But so, what if you're so if you're craving those, but you're imbalanced? Do you need? It's like I'm craving sugar or donuts.
Yeah.
But what if, does that ever happen when my yeast is low? Or do I stop actually craving sugar when my yeast is low?
So sugar is not necessarily a natural thing that we find. So,
if I'm craving sugar, it's probably, odds are I'm over yeasted.
Yeah. Because okay. like honey, for example, if you haven't eaten sugar, like you've truly done the no donuts and no cake type diet kind of thing. Not that I'm necessarily promoting that, but let's say you haven't done that. Honey is good and it's happy when you're eating it, but no one ever says, I really have a hankering for some honey.
They don't. You never want to just pound honey.
Yeah. Like okay. you're not glugging that down. Right. So it's an interesting thing where that sugar piece, you don't tend to crave those unless you have a yeast overgrowth.
Okay.
So, but if you have a very balanced diet, you could absolutely, and I think everything in moderation, you can absolutely have a donut. I think that's a fantastic thing.
Sure.
But you need to also feed everybody else.
But if you're craving that donut, mm-hmm. like you need it more than anything, you mm-hmm. probably have an overgrowth.
There's probably
if you say, yeah. hey, there's donuts here this morning. Yeah, that sounds good. I'm hungry. I'll take it.
Yeah.
Then you're probably okay on your yeast.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, if you don't have to like woof the whole thing. Or pasta is another big one.
Mm-hmm.
When people crave pasta, they really need it.
Right.
That's a different type of overgrowth. You should be able to eat pasta, but also eat other things. You shouldn't necessarily have a heavy drive to do that.
Okay.
Because what we're looking for actually is for your microbes to tell you what they need. And it should be like, ooh, you know what sounds really good? Some broccoli.
Yep.
Very rarely do people do that.
Right.
Right. And so, because those little microbes down there aren't as, you know, plentiful. And so their signal's not as great.
So their signal is being tamped down by the sugar signal. Mm-hmm. And that's why you want more sugar. Then you feed the sugar and then you get more yeast and more bad bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just force the growth of your other bacteria, your yes. diversity, mm-hmm. that's what you're trying to do. So it's not that I'm trying to eat carrots and broccoli. And mm-hmm. then eventually I'll like carrots and broccoli. It's that I'm yeah. going to eat carrots and broccoli, feed the bacteria that want those things.
Mm-hmm.
Those bacteria grow. My yeast and bad bacteria die. Mm-hmm. I become more balanced.
Or lower. They lower.
Mm-hmm. So they become less plentiful, but still present.
Yeah.
And then I will crave those sugary things less often and crave good foods more often.
Yes. Isn't that wild?
It makes sense why those things work and why you need to push through the diet.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing is I'm not promoting any specific diets. I'm not promoting like being a vegetarian. I was going to say an herbivore. Yeah. To be an herbivore or that kind of thing. I'm not necessarily saying one or the other, but what it is it's a balance just like anything else. And then if you have any questions or you're unsure where to go or even you can get an actual microbiome test to know what you have going on down Ooh. There, which would be kind of cool. You can talk to a dietitian or a medical provider and they can do those things for you and make recommendations for you. So,
and make sure if you talk to your medical provider, make sure that they've got some experience in nutrition.
Yes, that's a big one.
A lot of doctors say I can do it all, but mm-hmm. they took one class in college on nutrition.
Yeah, so you want to make sure, and that's why the dietitian's a nice add-on is because that's their focus. Yeah, so but the whole idea is that we're trying to balance and diversify our gut so that we're less likely to have these huge cravings into things that make us generally unhealthy. We feel yucky if all we eat is sugar.
Right.
So we're all yeasty.
So don't think, I like this. So if you don't think that I'm not going to eat this bad food or the sugary or carby or starchy food.
Because there's no bad foods. There's no bad foods. Too much of something.
But instead of saying like, well, I can't have this, you say, I need to build up some of my other microbiome because mm-hmm. I'm craving this so much.
Yeah.
Let's build up my other microbiomes. And so you think about it not as depriving yourself,
mm-hmm.
but as feeding something else. And then that will eventually make your cravings lessen.
Yeah. I like to think of them as little farmers down there.
Yeah.
And some of them like broccoli and some of them like corn and all this different stuff. And so I need to feed all of my little guys and not just the yeasty ones that are walking through town.
Eating the donuts. The fat cats in their fancy suits, their double-breasted suits that are all shiny. They're living in their million-dollar homes.
That's right. Yeah. But that's the thing is like your yeast can also feed on honey in a more healthy way.
Okay.
So it makes it more balanced.
I am, if you visualize it like this,
mm-hmm.
it's pretty easy.
Yeah, because you're like, I don't want my little duders just eating pizza every day.
I'm not craving that right now. In fact, I'm actually thinking we should go eat some broccoli and a carrot. A carrot sounds delicious right now. What? Did you just fix nutrition for everyone?
You're welcome.
You heard it here. You heard it here. This is the Morning Struggle podcast. And Jesse just fixed dieting.
That's right.
All right. I like it. What else we got?
That's it.
Okay, that's it. Easy action plan.
Yeah.
Right. So visualize your bacterias. I like that. Or your microbiome. Yeah, that's a good one. I like to visualize. But what are you going to do first?
So you're going to eat some vegetables.
You need some vegetables.
With that, preferably have some kind of dirt.
Right.
Not like a lot of dirty, but just a little bit of dirt.
Eat some dirty vegetables. Then you get your sugar. You're going to get it from more complex sources.
Yep. Complex, like honey, dark chocolates, fruits.
Okay.
Probiotics. Do your research.
Do your research if you're going to go probiotic route.
Mm-hmm. And then fermented foods.
And then fermented foods.
Is a really good one.
And then number five, the visualization.
Yeah, visualization, and pay attention to what you crave, because that's what's going to give you an idea of that visualization.
It's not your fault you're wanting ice cream. It's your bacteria's fault.
Mm-hmm.
So be the boss. You're the boss. Be the boss. Yeah. They're living in your belly.
Take care of them.
You're not their little vehicle. Mm-hmm. They're living in your world.
That's right.
So you tell them which ones you're going to feed. I like this, actually.
Isn't this cute?
This one's great. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to go do this. Are you going to go do this?
I'm going to do this.
So
absolutely.
We're going to fix our diets, fix our microbiomes, and doing that will build
a better you.
Thanks, guys.